A reading from the first book of Kings. Elijah the Tishbite, from Tishbe in Gilead, said to Ahab, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, during these years there shall be no dew or rain, except at my word." The Lord then said to Elijah, "Leave here, go east, and hide in the Wadi Cherith, east of the Jordan. You shall drink of the stream, and I have commanded ravens to feed you there." So he did, and he left and did as the Lord had commanded. He went and remained by the Wadi Cherith, east of the Jordan. Ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning, and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the stream. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Our help is from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. I lift up my eyes toward the mountains. Whence shall help come to me? My help is from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. May he not suffer your foot to slip. May he slumber not, who guards you. Indeed, he neither slumbers nor sleeps, the guardian of Israel. The Lord is your guardian. The Lord is your shade. He is beside you at your right hand. The sun shall not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will guard you from all evil. He will guard your life. The Lord will guard your coming and your going, both now and forever.
Dominus vobiscum. Lectio Sancti Evangelii secundum Matteum. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he had sat down, the disciples came to him. He began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the clean of heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter every kind of evil against you falsely because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven. Thus they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Verbum Domini.
Amen.
We have, in the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, these blessings, these promises. And when I read them, I'm reminded that the mystery of Christ, which we're called to enter into, is our cause for holiness. When we enter into his mystery, his life, we see that in the Beatitudes, his paschal mystery, his suffering, death, and resurrection, his suffering, that we are share in that, in the struggles in this world, and yet there's a blessing when in those struggles, when we are reduced, when we get small, we share in those blessings that he offers us, that resurrection, the power of that resurrection is operative in our life. I love the fact that, you know, he goes up the mountain, he sits down, his disciples came to him. We're said, when he saw the crowds, he gave these beatitudes. He gave, told about these blessings. He sees them in his disciples. Certainly they're portrayed in his countenance, but he sees them in his disciples, those who follow him, those who entrust themselves to him. The one that struck me for today was, blessed are the clean of heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the, you could say, the pure of heart, for they will see God. This beatitude is an invitation to see God. It's really quite astounding. You know, if we want to see God, to have this purity of heart. Sin causes blindness. You know, since the fall, we suffer from uncontrolled desires and a moderate movement of our senses, contrary to reason. We call this concupiscence, this desire, this inclination to sin, and sometimes very intensely. And at the heart, these desires are necessary, natural, good, desire for food and drink, sexual desire for marriage, for procreation. It's a beautiful gift from God. Serves the communion of spouses, serves and fosters love between the spouses. But since the fall, since that disorder has been, since the disorder's been introduced within ourselves, we have trouble ordering these desires through reason towards good and moderation. You know, it becomes easily disordered in us towards amusements or pleasures, recreations. It can incline us to sin. And we can become enslaved and put these desires before the kingdom, before the things of God, before love of our neighbor. We can be blind to God as being the focus, the center of our life. We can be blind to the value of the people around us, the great dignity of the people around us, and the care, the love, the concern we should have for them, the attention we should have for them. And certainly we can become controlled by these desires when we sin. James tells us, chapter 1, verse 14 and 15, but each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. It can become mortally sinful, seriously sinful, and bring death to our life of grace. Jesus tells us that it's not what goes into the mouth that defiles a man, but what comes out of the mouth that defiles a man. Speaking about just not addressing the Pharisees, we're just focused on maybe ritual washings, ablutions, cleansing before meals and things like that. Just these practices somehow can make us pure. You know, maybe there's a blurring between ritual purity and this moral purity that we are called to have. But Jesus is telling us it's the heart. He aims at the heart to transform the inner man. So nothing from the outside makes us impure, makes us unclean. It's the heart. It's not just the outward behaviors, but we can, as he tells us in the sermon as well, that we can commit adultery in the heart. Not just the physical act, but we can actually commit it when a man looks at a woman with lust. In that same chapter 15, he says, "For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murder, adultery, fornication, theft, false witness, and slander." 1 John chapter 2 tells us, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but of the world." The lust of the flesh. You know, we live by the senses and just by these desires. And today, I think especially in the West, we can have this lust of the eyes, this covetousness, this wanting, this lust for to have more things, or to always be endlessly doing. And of course, we get puffed up in our pride. And Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, you know, he's aiming at the transformation of our hearts. Certainly our outward behavior has to follow the inner heart that's been purified, but that's kind of the new part of his teaching, that these commandments, not just written on the stone or written on our hearts, to the gift of the Holy Spirit. The Spirit lives in us, makes it possible to live these commandments, to see others not as a thing to be used, that our understanding can be enlightened by God's teaching, his truth, you know, according to right reason. You know, the deep irony is when we live by our senses and the flesh, we even become blind to ourselves. We start to not see us ourselves as a unity of body and soul, that we say that it doesn't really matter what we do with the body. We don't see it as a unity. We see it at times like a disembodied spirit, that it doesn't matter. We see this especially in the sexual realm, and miss that purity of heart we're called to that involves the body, because we're body and soul. There's a spiritual and material principle to us, but it's united. That's what it means to be human. We have a body and a soul. We lose sight of the dignity of the body, of our own bodies, like it doesn't matter really what we do. And the light of God, his revelation, his love for us, gives us the proper order of things. In creation, when he creates Adam and Eve, before he was saying he sees his parts of creation as being good, when he creates Adam and Eve, he sees that it's very good. We're personal beings. We're made in his image and likeness. We have this beauty that God himself beholds. And sometimes we miss the beauty of ourselves and others, this dignity that we have. In our social media culture, we can live on just this level of comparison with others, and we can always find flaws with ourselves physically and judge others harshly. And we lose sight of that vision of God. You think about that he sees us as very good, delights in us. He's given us all these abilities to love, to know, you know, to serve him. That's blindness. We don't see the true value of things. And this concupiscence, this inordinate desire, this inclination to sin, can choke out this light that God gives us, can choke out the seed of the word. But the good news and the hope is that with human effort and strength from God, we can overcome these things. That's a tactic of the devil, right? To steal our hope, to say it's not really possible, right? That you failed too many times. Give up, quit, go home. You know, and I think that's where the fellowship of believers can really help us. You know, we can get hope from others, from trials, struggles they've been through. We can see God operative in their life. We can see God's grace working in their life. And we can have hope for our own. So with human effort and grace and seeking God's will, God can straighten out our life. Not my will. Forbid the world's will for us. We got a target on our backs, oftentimes by powerful forces in our culture, maybe seeking to make money, to get us to buy this, to do this. We got a target on our back with Satan, who's trying to distract us from heaven. Seek God's will. I don't really know what's best for me. God does. We become blind to the consequences, the ugly consequences of sin, of these inordinate fallen desires, of the attachments we get because of sin. And at times it's hard to put that in front of us. You know, this is where that leads. Isolated, you know, broken, hurt. We seem to not have the strength at times to bring it toward the forefront. Again, the fellowship of believers can help us with this. We can see God in others and remind us of the calling that we all have. Paul exhorts us in Galatians to walk by the Spirit, not the flesh, to follow his prompting, seeking God's will, turning to him, asking for help, asking the Spirit for help, asking God for help when we are tempted, and not to isolate from others, to be connected with others. That image and likeness, that great dignity we have, it's also in our communion with one another we image God. We thrive and we flourish when we're connected with others. Sin isolates us. I remember growing up watching the nature programs. I forgot what they were called. Those National Wildlife Nature Programs. But yeah, I remember as a kid, there's something exciting, but there's something so terrifying. You see the herd of gazelle or whatever in Africa, and the lion singles out the weak one, the one just born, isolates him from the group, and then it's all over. Back then, they didn't show you it. Today, they show you the thing's throat getting ripped out or something. We lose the horror of sin. We lose the horror of the consequences of sin in our life. But that beautiful opening antiphon from the Psalms, "The Lord is my light and salvation, whom shall I fear?" Hold on to that. You know, and sometimes it helps just to think of it, just the present moment today. What can I do today to be holy, to be committed to God, to conquer these faults and defects that we have? The Lord is my light and salvation. Who should I fear? Don't listen to the world, the flesh, and the devil trying to lead us another way. The Lord's the true light. I need light to have this vision. He's our hope, our salvation. He is the one that can save us, that it's only by God's grace that we cooperate with that we can be saved. Yes, the world, the flesh, and the devil seems to have us by the throat at times, but you know the good news there? It can also drive us to God. It can have us get on our knees and pray and turn to him. Or maybe I would have kept going without thinking about God. But now, in this struggle for holiness, we realize, hey, I absolutely need God. If I want a better way, if I want to live by a more beautiful light in my life, I need God. May we be faithful in this struggle, this journey, because he is our light and our salvation.